Welcome to Science Thursday. This is the fourth time we try to do this call. Do you think it'll work this time?
Yes.
Oh, flip. We got a Paul. Paul.
Hello?
We got Paul and Paul's audio.
Wow.
We're waiting for Jordan still. And he said he dropped his phone and now the button is jammed. So that sounds like a dog ate my homework excuse if I've ever
Yeah, this
heard
is
one.
getting more and more ridiculous. First, it's just not working. Now it's like I dropped it and it's caught in a mode where it's impervious to anchor calls.
So I'm sending a message. So Paul, do you want to talk about science? I talked to you on Twitter and asked you if you wanted to be on the show and you didn't answer. So my usually if people don't
Okay.
answer, I just try calling.
Yeah,
And I
that's
think
cool.
maybe in the heat of the moment you'll be like, you know what? I will answer this.
That's what I did. I answered the call.
I don't think I looked at Twitter today.
Isn't it good? Doesn't it feel nice?
Is kind of nice. Man, what a relief. All right, let's see what everybody's mad about today. What did you do?
Yeah, it's hard for me not to wake up and look at it because, I know it's true. You kind of crave that sort of drama, you know? Something deep inside.
If you were going to leave America, where would you move? That's a good one.
Oh, so Jordan says he's got to figure this out right now. It's randomly starting Siri and shit.
Doesn't he have, I guess most people don't have like 300 other phones just sitting around waiting.
Yeah. He's trying to unjam it. Okay.
I literally have like, I'm
LMK,
surrounded
when
by
you
phones
get it.
that I
We're
have.
gonna
I have.
start this show.
Oh, okay.
Wait, what did you want to say?
I was just going to say, I actually had to turn phones off so they don't all ring for Anchor at the same time.
Well. Oh shit. I was trying to start my theme song. Hold on. Oh shit, no, wait. I didn't know it started like that. I thought science, 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 science Thursday. Science rules. All right.
God, science does rule.
Science rules.
So I pulled together a bunch of articles this week. We've got a lot of animal news, some space news, alien news, some tech stuff, like surveillance stuff, and a little bit of psychology and neuroscience. Any science news that you guys can think of that you encountered this week, like in your normal environment? Just came across any?
I saw something about how, like, the way the carbon credits were working in the EU was basically they were just like giving a bunch of money to Chinese factories to like improve steel production. And it was real political and depressing, so. But not real
That's
science.
that does sound like what would happen though.
Yeah, we try to keep it
Yeah.
pause core on Science Thursdays.
I'm sorry for bringing
Yeah.
Also, it just sounds like kind of complicated. We like to keep it to things like dinosaurs couldn't stick out their tongues, stuff like that.
Yeah, as we all know, good science reporting is simple.
Is easy to explain.
Yeah.
Here, first of all, like just in that spirit, you might maybe came across this story this week. I saw it a few different times on my Twitter timeline. I thought it was funny, so I just thought we could talk about it. Flamingo that escaped a zoo in 2005 spotted in Texas. Did you hear about this fugitive bird?
Wow, no.
Ooh. Is it
I
homeward
love the
bound
story.
being?
I love the
Is it
story.
trying? No,
It's
it's like.
are flamingos migratory?
I think so.
What was the movie about the escape from jail? The really one everybody loves?
Prison
Homeward
Break?
Bound.
No. The real prison where he dug the hole behind the poster.
Oh, Shawshank Redemption.
Shawshank. This is like a Shawshank story. This.
Shawshank Flamingo.
Wow.
Wow.
So this bird, he escaped from the Kansas Zoo in 2005 with a friend, and he just showed up again. He has a tag on, so they know it's him. Let me read a little bit of this. According to Scott Newland, the curator of the birds at Sedgwick County Zoo, who spoke to the New York Times, these flamingos were already adults, and so clipping their wings, as they normally would with young birds, which have yet to develop sensation in the wing bones, seemed unethical. Instead, the zoo cut the birds' feathers, a procedure likened to getting a haircut, but one which the keepers would need to do often to prevent any escapes. However, in June 2005, Flamingo 492 and an accomplice, tagged as number 347, made their escape from the zoo after staff left the time between clippings too long.
Wait, can I question real quick.
Yeah.
How do they know which one was the ringleader and which one was the tag along?
I guess it's like if they...
They just knew these birds. They just knew their personalities already.
Yeah, I wonder. It's true. Good question. Because I guess it's because the one is still around. You feel like it's the leader. It was stronger in some way. Because 437 is thought to have died.
Oh. Man, 492. Yeah, said, 492 is a fucking hard ass.
This article is from the BBC. It was real. I was LOLing at this article. Although the pair initially stayed in the Wichita area, a month later, on the 4th of July, perhaps fittingly, Independence Day, the two fled for good after a bad thunderstorm. While 347 is thought to have died, Flamingo 492 has reportedly been spotted in the same area with a Caribbean flamingo companion. So there's a new. He's got a new bud.
Ooh.
But I just think it's like it's been since 2005. That's what. That's 13 years ago. Yeah,
it's been on the run for a while.
I just imagine like, what do you even think happened between him and the original bird? I feel like we're in like season 5 of this show.
Yeah.
Season 1 was like started in the zoo, and the final episode was like the escape.
The original bird got a movie. quit television.
Maybe.
Pursue the big screen.
I just think I would watch this show, though, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Prison Break for flamingos? 100 million percent.
Just so, like a fugitive flamingo.
You guys ever watch Zoo?
No. The one about having sex with horses?
No, it's like the animals rise up.
Oh.
It's really good.
No.
It's kind of like a Fringe. There's, you know, you got a crack team trying to figure out what's going on with these animals.
And oh my god.
I love that show. I didn't watch like later seasons. Obviously it just gets worse and worse as far as plot and characters, but the premise is just beautiful.
Yeah, it sounds good. Yeah, so let's root for that bird. It's a funny bird. You can look for pictures of it online. I mean, just because you know it's a criminal or like a fugitive, it like looks cooler for some reason. Like it looks, he looks like a cool guy. Do you want to, I guess I should go to more animal news just to keep it in the animal zone.
I see pictures. Yeah, this flamingo does not give a single fuck.
Imagine with a leather jacket on, you know, and a cigarette.
Absolutely.
Like, he looks cool.
His partner is cool too. They have a very, very cool color scheme.
They still are pink, right?
Yeah, one of them's like 492 is whiter.
Yeah.
And his new 347 was pinker. And I'm looking at a picture of them together.
But I don't know how old those pictures are, but you know, like the fact that people love to spout about flamingos is like, you know how like they get their color, right? It's because they eat shrimp and the shrimp are red. It's like that's everybody's fact about flamingos, but it's like I thought, like how long does it take for the pink to fade? And when they're out there on their own, they're probably not getting shrimp.
How long does it take for the pink to fade?
Yeah,
we all felt it in our hearts.
So
what's this new animal news? Yeah,
animal. This is actually from like 2 weeks ago, and I forgot about it, but it's really good. There's a new, okay, so like the to get fish from the ocean, you know, well, you know, the bends, right? You go down in the, you go down with like, with breathing apparatuses on, you got to go slowly up or else your
nitrogen bubbles get
exploded or something. Right. Yeah. So they said there's this one zone of the ocean, some 200 to 500 feet below the surface. It's the mesophotic zone. And they skip it because like people are like, they're either doing the easy shit, which is like the top of the ocean where you can just like easily get to, or you're going way deep down. You're like, we got to find out what's down there. And this is like the between zone. And it's like super unexplored for a lot of reasons. Like it's still hard to get to, you know, et cetera. So these scientists invented a device that helps fish make it out of the twilight zone alive, a portable decompression chamber that helps scientists protect fish from injury when they're brought to the ocean surface. So it's like this jar that decompresses over the course of a couple days where they can catch a fish down there, bring it back up, and then it'll survive. So it seems like an invention that I feel like should have been here already, but it's new.
Like if they want to research a crazy fish, they've just been pulling it from the surface and then it just explodes.
Yeah, exactly. They said there's been weird ways of doing it before, which they would like poke holes in their lungs with needles, I think it said.
Like oh, great.
Scientists poke holes into fish's swim bladders with needles to solve the problem. So they developed transparent collection jars 2 feet long that fit into chambers small and simple enough for divers to carry and manipulate. It's really cool, too, because so they, like, they just don't know much about this zone. Like, it's been said that we know more about the moon than we do about the ocean. We're kind of, like... Yeah, it's really crazy. We don't know that much about the ocean because it's so hard to study.
So one thing about science fiction that I sort of wish we would go for is like there's this entire chapter of science fiction about like living underwater in the oceans, and like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos they don't care about that. What's the deal with that?
It's because because it's always been there. There's more potential. I guess we think we know what's down there, right? We're not expecting anything really surprising. Whereas space has so much potential, you know.
Still seems pretty tight, though.
Yeah, it is really tight. And they said they at the Monterey Bay Aquarium, they brought these fish back from this special zone. Now in our exhibit, we have 8 undescribed species of fish on the public floor that people can see that they'd have no opportunity to see anywhere else in the world. So it's kind of crazy, right? Like, I want to go to that aquarium and see these rare fish unnamed. Like, that's how unexplored the zone is. They just went down there, brought back a bunch of brand new stuff. Neat, right?
I'm with Evan where I feel bad because I love space stuff. And I want to go to space, but I feel bad. Like, we do have this whole frontier to explore.
It's
probably easier to explore than space that we could.
Yeah, it is easier. But it's still hard, right? I think one of the hard things is, like, it's hard to do remote-controlled stuff because water, it's hard to transmit wireless signals through the water, if I'm understanding that. Yeah, and so that's, like, one of the big challenges. So it's going to be cool if that problem gets figured out, you know? We can just have kids in their rooms just like poking around the bottom of the ocean with submarines, with remote controlled submarines.
That sounds amazing.
Boring stuff, right? Like crowdsourcing the just like general exploration. That'd be cool.
What if there was a VR game that is really just you're just piloting a real, like you're like time sharing a real submarine drone?
Yeah, it's like, wait, Ender's Game, except instead of with war, it's with science. So that was pretty cool. I'm psyched about that. I'm almost like, I want to go to that aquarium just to see these rare fish. Although they don't. Yeah,
which aquarium is it actually?
I think it said the Monterey Bay Aquarium.
Oh, cool.
I believe. Yes.
I don't know where that is, but I can find
it. I think it's in, let me see. Monterey Bay. Is it in San Francisco?
Yeah, you could theoretically do this.
It's south of San Francisco. Yeah, it's cool. Speaking of space, should we transition to space news?
Let's do it.
There's a couple space things. space is full of dirty, toxic grease, scientists reveal. Oh, this one was funny. This is from a report from The Guardian that I'm reading from here. Dang, I didn't highlight any of this. Where is this? anyway, yeah, there's a bunch of grease. It's dirty as fuck. So if you're just driving a spaceship around there, you'd come back with a greasy ship.
Like deep space or
space. Sorry, I usually highlight the key facts in here so I can read them back, but now I'm like skimming to find how it's a large fraction. I want to say they said it was like 25%.
Well, when like you say grease,
25% of space is just pure grease.
Sludge.
If I'm remembering that from yesterday, yeah, it was like a lot.
But like, isn't grease like the primary thing in grease is oil? So like, what?
It's greasy carbon. They said it smells like mothballs.
So okay. That's a very specific smell.
Space smells like mothballs.
See, now I'm actually pulling way more team sci-fi ocean than space.
Yeah, yeah, space.
Now it just sounds dirty and gross. I can see that, like sooty. It's like a sooty, gross.
Yeah, space. It's like there's dust and grease, and so like gunky grease, too, like gunky, dusty grease too. So it's not
disgusting. Elon Musk, you're wrong.
Okay, wait. Until now, here, I'll just read this paragraph. Until now, there's been uncertainty over how much carbon is drifting between the stars. About half is expected to be found in its pure form. The rest is chemically bound with hydrogen in either a grease-like form known as aliphatic carbon or a gaseous version of naphthalene, the main chemical component of mothballs. So, yeah, it's pretty much just like hydrogen and carbon that is like sort of just in this like either grease or dust, and it smells like mothballs.
So here's what we know: no moths in space. Moth free zone. It's too dusty, ironically, because moths are pretty dusty.
Wait, let me read this paragraph. This is where I said the amount. They found that there are about 100 greasy carbon atoms for every million hydrogen atoms, accounting for a quarter and a half of the available carbon in the Milky Way. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah. So it's not like 25% of the volumetric space is space turd. It's like...
Yeah. But a quarter and a half? What does that mean? A quarter and a half
of the atoms, like, you know, so there could be tons of empty space between the atoms, but like of all the atoms,
but of everything, 25% of it is just grease out there,
gunk.
It's a lot of grease.
Grease is swept away within our own solar system by
solar wind. Yeah, so it's actually not greasy right outside, but the more you get outside the solar system, you're gonna hit grease.
Interesting. Well, that's nice. I didn't know that there's so much carbon out there, just like floating out and nothing.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty quiet like discovery. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you, you know, we're out there looking for carbon, and little do we know, there's just a bunch of space shit just hitting our satellites.
I don't think it is hitting our satellites, though. It, like Paul said, I think it's like not that greasy outside. Of ours.
Well, I mean, you know, the ones that have taken a little trip.
Yeah, true. They're just getting greasy as hell. Did the golden? You think the golden record's getting all scuffed out by grease?
Yeah, that's probably why they have. It's but it's so funny though, because like when they wasn't. Do you guys remember this news story? This is so long ago, but about there was this one telescope that got like a single speck of dust on the mirror array, and they're like, it's broken. We can't use it anymore.
Yeah. That was I don't remember. I think it was it the Hubble?
Yeah. And then they had to go up and like replace a big piece of it.
No, I actually heard about this today and on a different science podcast, and they there was like a speck of paint. Yeah, well, I don't know how long ago the Hubble was, but there's like a speck of paint on a tool or something, and then their measurement for like the warping of this giant mirror was like a time. They said a fraction of a human hair off, and so that made the whole thing out of focus.
Out of focus,
and they had to go up there, and it took 3 more years for them to like. They said like put a bunch of like adjustments on the other stuff to like make up for this warped mirror.
That's like slightly off. Annoying. That's the most annoying thing ever. Can you imagine just being like the director of that operation at NASA, and you're like, wow.
I just knew. Well, the thing is like if I'm doing anything like that, I know the first time we fire it up, there's going to be something wrong. They had to have inspected it.
I guess that's true.
I mean, they try not to, but like,
yeah.
I mean, you just know it. But I think like Paul, like I remember the like speaking of that golden record. And the edge of the universe, or the edge of the solar system, there was like a radio lab or something where they like recorded the sound. Like, I think there's like an almost like you hit a wall at the edge of the solar system where the solar wind isn't protecting you anymore. I don't remember, but there's almost like it's not even like a fade from what I remember from this episode. Like, there's a spot out there where you just like slam into a wall of like, oh, okay, you're outside the solar system.
Would you guys? So there's a episode of this anime called JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, and one of the ways they deal with one of the villains is he's so powerful they can't really stop him, so they like paralyze him or like turn him into stone or something and just punch him out of the gravitational field of the Earth. So I'm wondering if you guys would you accept immortality? But you'd have to just like you just have to float through the universe forever.
No, that would be so boring.
Yeah, Paul.
Well, I've thought about it. The there's a Arthur C. Clarke short story called "The Wind from the Sun," and you know it's been out for 50 years, so I'll spoil it for you.
Sure,
but the person ends up. ends up on like a wrong they're just on like a you know doing like a space yacht race and they end up on a messed up trajectory and so they're just going to be drifting away from Earth forever but they're going to die right
mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like cast as sort of heroic because this person's going to go be the like the first person to like leave the solar system and it's like,
oh cool
it's you... kind of exciting so I always thought like you know if someone just wanted to like make a rocket put my mortal body in it and then just shoot it out there like that's pretty exciting to me. I know it's like kind of dumb and like doesn't really accomplish anything but still pretty cool feat.
It is a pretty cool feat. You know what I in this anime context where he's like there's no ship you can't literally like rethink like orient yourself what I would imagine in that situation is just like something super epic is going on behind you but you just literally can't you just can't turn around and look at it. Like a supernova is just happening. You're like, damn.
Oh, dang.
Sure wish I could see that.
Maybe I get good at like meditation or something.
Exactly.
You'd get so bored. You go through like, did you watch Westworld this season?
Are you shooting hosts right now?
Okay. Look, I live in New York. I get it. there's a
fireworks.
People shoot off fireworks year round in my neighborhood, but also there's like some sort of gang war like one neighborhood over, and so I like see these notifications on my phone on the Citizen about like gun battles.
Oh Jesus!
And then like, and so every time I hear fireworks go off, it really freaks me out. Thankfully, I can like see them light up the sky right now, so I know they're for sure fireworks.
I have a good segue to that.
Maybe. Is fireworks related?
There's a new volcano that just erupted in the Galapagos.
Oh, Jesus.
Sierra Negra volcano eruption. Nobody got hurt or anything.
Oh, good.
This is one that erupts like every decade or so. Actually, like I think speaking of 2005, I think they said, yeah, last time it erupted is when 492 Flamingo escaped.
Oh damn! Wow, there's wow, there's connecting points here.
But yeah. What do you guys think about like the like Pacific Coast like breaking off along the fault line or like Yellowstone or like
Yellowstone was what I was going to ask think, about.
Do you think in our lifetime we're going to have some sort of American cataclysm?
I know, right? They say it's any moment. It's scary as heck.
The Yellowstone one. I watched this absolutely horrendous Discovery Channel like featurette on it, and it was like, if it goes at full force, the amount of ash it throws up into the atmosphere could cause a global cooling, setting off an apocalypse amongst developed civilizations.
Yeah, that's what would happen. It's pretty scary.
Why has there not been a video game that like does that?
Where what? Where
you have to rebuild after a volcano?
Yeah.
It's because it's depressing. I don't know.
No, dude. Every game at E3 this year was about apocalypse.
Mm.
It's definitely that. The depressing angle is definitely not stopping people.
I guess they're just trying to prepare us.
Can I pitch you a reality TV show that I really want
yes.
to happen in the world?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, four people, I don't know, it doesn't matter to me how many people, more than one person are put in like a dome, like, and they're completely shut off from the outside world. And they're given, and there's an Ethernet port on the side of the dome. And all the raw materials exist inside this dome to rebuild civilization such that they can build a computer, get on the internet. And their goal is to get on the internet. Or even just like send like a message over TCP/IP, mm-hmm. like we're done or something, hello world or whatever. If they can send a message over the Ethernet cable adhering to the TCP/IP protocol, and they're given all the documentation, all the instructions, all the information,
mm-hmm.
could you rebuild a computer?
Oh my God, Paul,
that'd be tough. I don't really know.
This I know. I feel like I was born for this TV show.
Oh, you think you could do it?
Absolutely, without question.
Wow. Now that you say it.
Especially if there's documentation, then yes. I feel like it'd be a nice like 2 or 3 week experience.
2 or 3 weeks? Oh my God.
Oh, dang.
That's pretty confident.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it took him forever to figure out like transistors, right?
Well, he doesn't have to figure it out. He just has to figure out
exactly.
how to make it
so,
out
like,
of those materials.
How much is there in manufacturing technique versus just like pure like invention?
Oh, you're saying you're saying like literally there is like raw form silicon
yes.
in a bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. That's why I thought your
oh my Lord.
Was pretty ambitious. I was like, wow, maybe. I admire your confidence.
Okay. Now I'm thinking like maybe 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, do you guys ever watch that Primitive Technology YouTube channel?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, man! What a weird channel.
Like making a router.
Oh Jesus!
out of bamboo and like mud, fired in a kiln somehow.
Oh my God! I know that there was that one guy who, this one artist dude who like used a big lens in the desert to make glass in a sand 3D printer. That's pretty neat.
Whoa.
Like, you use a big Fresnel lens to, like, yeah, just 3D print some sand.
That's cool.
But, Paul, I love this show. Please make it and put me in it.
Okay.
Let me see if I can segue from the dome. Let's see here. No, I can't.
Oh, jeez. What did I say?
Let's see. So, alien news. Some more aliens have been found. Scientists find evidence of complex organic molecules from Enceladus. Enceladus? Is that how you say that one? You guys know this one?
This planet?
It's one of Saturn's moons. Enceladus? Is that how you say it?
I have no idea.
I think I've heard it said that way. Anyway, so Using mass spectrometry data from NASA's Cassini spacecraft, scientists found that large carbon-rich organic molecules are ejected from cracks in the icy surface of Saturn's moon Enceladus. Scientists think that chemical reactions between the moon's rocky core and warm water from its subsurface ocean are linked to these complex molecules.
So, that's not life, right? That's similar to what they found on Mars.
My clickbait is that. But no, they said it's better than the Mars stuff. that's what they said. Anyway, I'll read this. This is from Southwest Research Institute. I don't know. Anyway. They said, we are yet again blown away by Enceladus. Previously, we only identified the simplest organic molecules containing a few carbon atoms, but that was very intriguing, said SWRI's Dr. Christopher Gline, a space chemist specializing in extraterrestrial chemical oceanography. He is a co-author of a paper in Nature outlining this discovery. Now we've found organic molecules with masses above 200 atomic mass units. That's over 10 times heavier than methane. With complex organic molecules emanating from its liquid water ocean, this moon is the only body besides the Earth known to simultaneously satisfy all the basic requirements for life as we know it. So it's a really dank zone to grow life.
Dank zone.
But we just learned that there's a whole bunch of like carbon molecules
just in space.
Just in space. So what makes it special? I mean,
these are big, complex ones.
These are fatter.
I'm really happy. They're so massive.
Yeah.
So here's my question, guys. What if what the scientists think are good qualifications for life are like good to have, they're like best practices, but like what if life like sprung up on Earth because of like the vibes?
Nah, life's really common. I don't think we had anything that cool.
Oh, okay.
I think like what we are looking for when we say like good for life is like we have a narrow definition of life, and so it's like almost like saying, let me think of a good metaphor here. Like, what are the good ingredients for food? And the only food you like is spaghetti. And so you're looking for like
sauce, pasta.
Yeah, basically. And I think like our definition of life is just basically spaghetti. And so we're looking for, it's kind of a good metaphor. We're looking for life as we know it. And I'm not sure if like life as we know it is the only life worth respecting or being like psyched about, but maybe they're right. I don't know. I'm not a fucking scientist.
I will also say, like, how do I get that title of space chemist?
I know, right? Cool. Like, what was his title? Specializing in extraterrestrial chemical oceanography.
Wow.
Yeah. Dang. So these came from the ocean, though. They're like, that's why they think they're so complex, is because they think there's like hydrothermal vents down in the ocean and there's some sort of ecosystem down there that was able to produce these, and then they're like geysers too.
The geysers shoot them
out of the ocean.
I only knew about Europa. I didn't know there were other moons in our solar system with oceans.
Yeah, I was also not aware of any other moons that are like geothermically active. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Europa is the one I know too. So yeah, Enceladus. I had heard it mentioned, but yeah, I think like a couple episodes ago we were talking about the Mars aliens, and we were like, "What?" In the same article, they were like, "Oh, we also found this stuff on that moon," and I was like, "What the fuck? Why didn't I hear about this?" But this is, I guess, that same information, but they looked at it again and they were like, oh dang, this is more cooler than we thought.
It really bugs me that the scientists could have just like made up a moon, and I could go my whole life without knowing for sure. What they like, one edit to Wikipedia, a couple news articles, and I'm convinced that there's another moon.
I think that you could maybe see these with a telescope, but maybe not.
Have you guys ever had that impulse where like there's like a really cool moon and then you throw up your 28 millimeter iPhone. You're like, this is the incorrect tool for this. And you think about all the things you'd have to do to get like really great pictures of space stuff.
Of our moon.
Yeah. And you're like, never mind. This is so bad.
Yeah. I bought a telescope recently because I was going out to Josh Tree, you know.
Yeah.
Going to the desert, vibing out, looking at the stars, looking at the Milky Way. I was so disappointed by how weak the Milky Way was. Like, I could barely see it. That's like over exaggerated in photography. But then also I got this telescope that to look at the moon, and I thought I was going to like see like a lot of the moon, like it was going to be really in focus. It was only a little closer. I just can't believe
good telescopes are so expensive.
Yeah. This one, okay, it was like $100. So I wasn't expecting much, but I thought it was going to be better than that.
If you look at what's going on with the telescope area of B&H, you know, you'll find some shit.
It's crazy because I feel like it's really cheap to get like a life changing microscope experience. You know,
that's such a good point.
You can get like a toy microscope at like a literal toy store and like look at microscopic life, and it's amazing. But it's hard to look at the moon for some reason.
Yeah, it did look better. Like, I could see more detail than I ever could, but...
Yeah, but for, like, I feel like I should be able to spend $200 and have a fucking HD movie experience.
It was cool. Did you guys have telescopes, microscopes when you were little?
Definitely.
I had a microscope.
Yeah, me too. Did you have the kind... I had the one that looked like a little TV. It was, like, a sort of, like, projector type thing. Like, I didn't look through viewing. Yeah, you had one.
And I also had the, like... regular kind.
It's cool.
A regular one.
Do you guys ever look at your sperm?
Ew, no.
Neither did but I. Also, but Neither also, did I didn't I have could. It.
If I knew that I could, I would. Armed with that knowledge, I would do it.
Man, that's such a good idea.
I don't know if you. I'm not going to Google it, but I don't even know if were our home microscopes strong enough to see those. I don't think so.
I don't know.
Do you guys just look at like pond water though? Is that what you guys looked at?
Yeah. Yeah. We had like a little stream next door. Yeah.
I remember I had like glass slides, and so I would just scrape just anything.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was though. I just remember scraping. I think I looked at blood a lot.
Oh, really?
You know the nicest thing?
Really into blood as a kid.
Listen, it's a mystery, man. It's just this liquid, and it supposedly has all the shit in it, and you just have to take it on face value, you know? It's a big jump. But the best thing that you can get is our pre-made slides. That is a hell of a time.
I just didn't see the adventure in that. I was always getting my own hard water.
Listen, sometimes you got it, but yeah.
Speaking of pond water...
While we're doing this, I'm going to look up how much it would cost to get a telescope that can fucking see this shit.
Let me see.
I want us to colonize, obviously, the ocean and Mars. But I also want enough of a colony on the moon that you can just look up at night and just see the moon. Like, you know. You know how you can see cities from space? Because of the lights. Yeah. I just want to be able to see lights on the moon.
That'd be neat.
So inspiring.
Let's see here. Ooh.
So here I got some tech news. This is kind of a weird thing. I had to read it a lot to understand it completely, but so the title of this article is "System Lets Public Cameras Send You Messages." And it's like this idea that like surveillance is bad, right? So we want all the cameras to send you a message when you're being like videoed, and then like give you the option to like make it get censored, like blur your image in the shot. You know what I mean? To give you like. So that there's still information that a person was moving through the shop, but it can't tell it's you. Does that make sense?
Honestly, no, I don't understand.
Sounds really convoluted. I mean,
it's really, it's okay. It's in Futurity. Is Futurity a shit site?
I've never heard of that website.
All right. I've not.
But also, I sort of wasn't listening very hard because I just found a $16,000 telescope that you can buy on B&H. And it's completely
That'd be cool.
It's completely computer controlled. Like, it's got a remote. It's got the whole shit. It's 16-inch, it says. 16-inch Schmidt-Cassegrain OTA with a 3,251-millimeter focal length.
I don't even know what that means.
But you can still look through it with your own eyeball, right?
I am
like,
not
like, I don't want to just take pictures because, like, there's plenty of good pictures I can look up on the internet.
Yeah.
Fair.
It is different to see it with your own naked eye.
You want those photons to directly hit your retinas.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You want to feel that.
Eyes are kind of HDR.
That's yeah, true. They are.
That's actually a super valid point.
I can't wait for camera sensors to become as HDR as eyeballs.
I know. Jesus Christ.
It's taken longer than I thought it would, honestly.
I had this theory when I was like, I don't know, digital cameras had been out for a little bit, but they were still pretty shitty. And it was like, if you could ever take a picture as good as what eyeballs could see, it'd be like the best photo.
Yeah. Well, like I mean, first, arguably HDR photos can do it if you combine two different exposures.
I was actually just looking this up. You need like, so there's no, I was like, can you make an HDR video? Like, just can you do that?
Oh,
like,
I've with tried to do
super great
it.
Stuff. Oh god, it's so annoying. The only thing you can actually use right now is the GH5, apparently, and even that's just sort of like a hack.
What's the
but
hack
it is
that
10.
Do?
It's 10 bit. And they basically it's a combination of 10 bit and a logarithmic profile.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just conform it to. It doesn't really like. It doesn't. You know what I mean. Like,
listen to what I did to my okay. for my hack. And this is crazy. It's like, have you ever heard of, what's it called? Like, not Magic Lantern or Black Magic. You know,
yeah,
like
Black Magic? BMCC camera?
No,
yeah.
Like the hacked camera, the hacked Canon.
Oh, the
stuff.
Magic Lantern. Magic yeah. Lantern.
Is that what it's called?
Oh, did you see every other frame dealing?
Yeah, yeah. So it like strobes. Ooh. It strobes at one, at a bright exposure, and then it quickly switches to a dark exposure. Like really fast, and then you have to like in post, like combine those.
Use APIs to like spit that out.
Yeah, so you have to like I don't know, then like switch up. Yeah, like group the two exposures into separate blocks, and then yeah, stack them. It didn't turn out well, I'll tell you.
Yeah, that. I was gonna say that sounds like something I would say no to if someone was like, "Can I pay you to do this?" I'd be like, "No."
It was an experiment. I mean, I wanted to try it.
Well, that's perfectly legit. But yeah, I don't know. You still, yeah. Point being, you still can't get a camera to do anywhere even close to what the eye can do for dynamic range. It's
unfortunately.
Which is sort of dumb because like the surface area of like a full frame or medium format camera is actually bigger than the eye. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like theoretically, the like A7R with like 42 megapixels should be close, but it's just not.
It's. Yeah, it's. So, I'm
sounds
bummed.
Like God did a pretty good job.
I'm gonna say it'll probably be like
I mean, yeah.
five more years though.
So here's something cool that I was gonna do a YouTube video about. It's in my like list of video ideas. But it is directly related to this, and I'm clearly not gonna do it. So I'll just spit it out now. Basically, there was a company that. Made this like slurry of different sized quantum dots. You can sort of make quantum dots. Basically, you grow quantum dots. So whatever size you want them, you sort of just stop the growth process and, you know, finish them, coat them with something. And so like different sizes react to different lights. And so they made like a red size and a green size and a blue size. And they just put this all in like a little chemical stew. And then they coated, you know, basically a regular CMOS sensor with these quantum dots. And instead of reading, you know, capturing photons like in that little channel that they have to flow down and then get sensed, basically the quantum dots react to the light as it hits it. And then that creates an electrical charge, which is then read by the CMOS directly. And so like it's super dynamic range. because they do have a pretty big variance of dot sizes. And Apple acquired them.
Whoa. So that's and the answer is quantum?
Quantum dots.
Do you think our eyes are quantum at all?
What is a quantum dot?
I know, good question.
A quantum dot is literally just a little cluster of stuff. It's not like an invisible particle or anything. It's literally just a bunch of shit that has some quantum effects. Like if you excite it, it will make a certain wavelength of light.
I don't know.
So you can just make them. They can just be manufactured. You can make them at home, actually. I've watched some YouTube videos.
And so that's used for sensing or for display?
So those ones are for display, yeah.
I heard our sense of smell is quantum, maybe.
It does kind of freak me out that like you smell by stuff directly hitting your brain in some way. I'm not sure I like that.
They said that it's like this thing where like all these different smells are like different molecule shapes, right? Like imagine it's like Tetris. And when they go near your nose or something into the zones, that you know how like the signature thing about quantum shit is like it's like always in a potential cloud, like it's in a cloud of possibilities of where it is, you know what I mean? It's not in any location.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at every location at once. And so this is why, I don't know, you can smell so fast or something. It's like it'll hit these like sensors, and then it'll try, like it's almost like Tetris, like trying every single angle, and then it immediately fits because it was trying every single angle at once.
It was like instance in, you popped into the Warcraft.
Yeah, it was like what is it called when you like bash like try to get a password by just like trying everyone really fast.
Just brute forcing it.
Yeah, it was basically like that's what they're saying. That and they said that's how like there were recent discoveries in photosynthesis that were along those same lines, that the reason why it's so I don't know, like one of the properties of it is quantum, and it works that way. Pretty interesting, right?
I know nothing about quantum, and I hate the idea of Tetris pieces hitting my brain.
Yeah.
So you're saying the best way to hack the brain is through smell?
Whoa.
Maybe, but I don't know. What if the eyes are... you're telling me, like, these quantum dots. I know this is really going off topic, but these quantum dots, I don't really know. I didn't read this article, but maybe... I wonder if, like, the eyes are somewhat... use quantum properties, too, you know? I wonder about the brain, if the brain does too, because like I've heard there's some non-local stuff, like things will be connected in two parts of the brain, seemingly like not connected, but are doing the same thing. You know what I mean?
Wait, Paul, I want to tell you about this thing, about this amazing article. I'll send it to you later. About how like brain cognition works. They like basically have this algorithm. I already told Rondo, but he didn't.
No, I read the article.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it was like about like different like harmonics on the brain and how the brain is like, they flattened it out and then like did different harmonics on it, and they matched up with like really like thing. I don't really actually remember all the details, but
I remember the details. Let me just roll through this really quickly. So they found an algorithm, Paul, that accounts for the generation of spots on all these different animals. Like, it's just a formula that, like, very closely matches it. And so they sort of, like, used this formula to see if it applied and, like, worked on the folding patterns of the brain. And they were like, whoa, it totally does. And so that's how they flattened it out. And then once they ran MRI, you know, once they, like, displayed MRI loops on this pattern, they said that, you know, it has this sort of, like, resonant profile. And what they're sort of hypothesizing is that like there may be these like resonant harmonics that are sort of like standing waves. Like they use an example of like if you put sand on a cello and then like ran it over it, it makes these, you know, you can see the little striations. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you
kind of.
I don't know if you've ever seen those.
Like when you put sand on something and run a frequency through it, it like makes a shape.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they're basically that's what they're saying is like you can track this or this, you know, they connected it to what happens with their research in LSD and how it sort of it brings that like resonant wave, the like music of the brain, into chaos. It's cool. It's a good article.
Okay. This is bonkers. Please send me this article. Okay. About, I don't know, like 3 months ago, I was high and I had this like crazy epiphany about brain waves. Like, you know, like obviously I wasn't smart at the time, but I was really into this idea that like brain waves are something. So here's what I wrote down. Memories function like waves, not graphs. When you're telling a true story, you look inside yourself and see where the ripples take you, because the memory ripples touch many other ripples at once, so there's a lot to think about. When you tell a lie, you enter empty brain space with fewer truth islands to splash into, so you have to imagine the true things.
Makes perfect sense to me.
And then, like, later, I've got, like, this librarians versus vampires thing, which is interesting. And then, like, maybe intelligence really is wave interference.
Yes!
We can combine these incoming signals into new meaning.
You've done it, Paul!
There's a compatibility of their data types to make the build-up uponable.
Listen, I mean, that's honestly what you're describing right there is not terribly different from what this article
goes. Yeah, out. That is kind of what it's saying a bit.
Because that's how we make, like, that's what music is just we're combining a bunch of very simple waves to make something that sounds like, smells like Teen Spirit, you mm-hmm. know? But it's all just, you could decompose it down to just, like, sine waves.
It's neat. I hope that they find out that we're just music machines. That'd be tight.
I've got such the article for this. I know I'm gonna abandon the one about the surveillance cameras, but I think actually you guys would be interested in that. But this, just because we're talking about neuroscience, there's an interesting article about what time feels like when you're improvising. The neurology of flow states. And I'll say, like, the science of flow, you know, being in flow, I'm like really skeptical about that idea, because like people are just trying to like, it's like people trying to maximize human potential and stuff. And I'm just like skeptical about like how you define what is like the best way to be a human and stuff like that. But anyway,
like the nootropics guys that are just like, with guarana.
But not that I don't think these are real, but I don't know. Anyway, this is an interesting article. It's in Nautilus, and they say basically that whenever you're in a state, when you're like improvising, they're talking about like jazz musicians improvising, that the part of your brain that is involved in intentional, internally generated self-expression in the pursuit of goal-oriented behaviors is going. But then this other part of your brain that thinks about like social consequences and judgment and stuff like that, the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex and the lateral orbifrontal cortex, they're shut down. They're turned down, at least. And so they say, but as any skilled performer will tell you, inhibitions are the key enemy, or the enemy of improvisation. So, like, I don't know. It's just kind of saying that. And then also, like, time expands too. Like those parts of your brain that are shut down, those the ones that are about about self-consciousness and whatever, that's also the ones where you like keep track of time, and yeah, your sense of time is all effed up. And they talk about these things are also turned off in dreams, and that's why like nonsense shit happens, and like dreams can feel long or really long or really short. So pretty interesting.
I do really like research about time dilation, because it is so interesting that, like, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, this day will never end. You know what I mean? Like, everything is going so slow. And now I feel like past week was, like, you know, the length of a single city block.
Yeah, true. I mean, it's insane. Like, there's this one. I listened to the Voices of VR podcast about like just VR stuff and VR research. And there's this one really simple study where they made people just hang out on a VR island, and they made the sun move across the sky at different speeds. And they would control the length of these like virtual days. And when the sun moved faster, their experience of time was like, they thought more time had passed. And when they would make it go slower, they felt like less time had passed. So like just with like light, like these simple ways, you can completely just like warp someone's sense of time pretty easily. Like you have control over warping someone else's sense of time.
It's true. We have these like very simple dependencies, like gravity. You know, if you don't have gravity, your bones just turn into pretzels. Mm-hmm. Like,
and another study was just like anytime anybody's in any VR, at least of what I've seen, and I've tested this myself. If you put them in for a half hour and you say like how much time has passed when you take it off, they always say 10 minutes. It's insane.
Huh.
Weird.
Well, it'll loop this back to anime.
Yes.
So if you got blasted into the universe and you were frozen, but you couldn't move at all and you're out of a solar system, so you're not, there's no specific sun that's moving. I guess the one thing that's moving are the stars, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Would your sense of time get like kind of crazy? Like maybe like a year would pass in a second for you?
Just, absolutely.
Just because the limited amount of stimulation?
I don't know. That's, I just read a whole book about that, time.
Yeah, that's a nifty one, Paul. I would earmark that for some novel shit.
I've got such a good idea. I don't even want to talk about it, but I just read this book about time and like, just like about how it's actually, it doesn't exist. It's only in our heads and stuff. And like, it's basically like time doesn't exist. But, I thought of like, you, like, speaking of quantum shit, quantum entanglement, you know about that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like how, like if I, you have like two particles and they're entangled, I could be like on the other side of the planet and affect one, and the other one will instantly change. Imagine, like you said, Evan, that you have a quantum television, right? LG makes the quantum television where there's one TV that has a camera and on it, and then another TV where all the pixels on that TV are quantum entangled with the other one, right? And then you have one person stay on Earth, and then you have another person go like down by a black hole, right? Like right next to a black hole. So time starts going way slower for them. But you have this quantum entangled TV screen. Would we start be playing, would like your view of the people back on Earth start looking like a time lapse video? Like they're playing back at like super high speed because you've got this quantum entangled communicator?
Wow. That's a brain twister. I ever heard one.
Huh.
Know what I mean? That's my experiment that I've got to try out. Maybe it's stupid. I really need a good like a quantum scientist to like fact check that.
You're like LG. I need a really good.
Well, I don't need LG. I just need like a scientist to be like, what would happen? I guess the basic question is, if you have two quantum entangled particles, and yeah, you take them into very distinctly different gravity amounts, like one really close to something really massive and one like way out in space or something, would they affect each other, and how would they affect each other?
I love that. Okay, so here's my anime pitch. We ran this experiment. Basically, this is in the aftermath right after the experiment. There's this localized point in Japan where time is slowing way down and it's fucking everything up, and they have mm-hmm. to send an elite squad of teenagers for some reason in, and they're the only ones that can stop this from happening.
That's interesting. I mean, the cool thing about, I don't know, but it'd be cool to like keep going into the area and then coming back out and like, oh shit, 100 years have passed.
Yes. Oh hell yeah, this is good. It's yeah. this is what the best basic analysis, this is essentially the equation that Netflix original anime is running on. They're like, we're going to cook this idea down so basic, but it's going to be animated, so it's going to be pretty tight. And I'm like, you're right. It is pretty tight.
Pretty good. So, yeah, I guess that article didn't hit as hard as I wanted it to, but it is kind of cool that they're saying they're just talking about time dilation and stuff.
I just wish I knew more because, like, I've experienced it in so many different contexts. Like, you know, I used to play lacrosse a lot. And, like, the idea of the zone or whatever, like, whatever that, like, athletic state is definitely something that I've experienced. It's just, like, how could you ever possibly demonstrate that? You know, how could you test that? Like, you'd have to be wearing, like, a portable MRI machine, like, while you were playing.
I think that's what they did. I think that's – I'm not sure if – I don't know if that did the – I didn't read it in this article, but I swear to God I've heard – that there was an experiment where they made like jazz pianists and stuff like improvise while in an MRI machine.
Oh, interesting. I see. Well, I mean, that is what most science mostly is. It's like backdooring your way into a concept like that. So that makes sense.
Yeah. I thought you had to be like super still in an MRI.
Yeah. Yeah. They were locked up. I mean, it was probably tough to do it, but I swear I might've even seen this video. I have such a strong image of this happening. Hmm. Do you want some more psychology news? This is one from like 2 weeks ago, but it's still really relevant because it's hashtag World Cup fever.
Wow, what a crossover, what a combo.
Yeah, social bonding, key cause of football violence. So previous research has linked sports-related hooliganism to social maladjustment. Example, previous episodes of violence or dysfunctional behavior at home, work, or school. However, social bonding and a desire to protect and defend other fans may be one of the main motivations, not only for football hooliganism, but extremist group behavior in general. So,
I feel like that's pretty straightforward. I feel like we already knew that.
It's sort of, yeah. I guess, but it's weird. They're saying previous research has linked, like, the people who, like, act out after, like, your team wins or loses and, like, tips over police cars. They're like, oh, yeah, those are, like, the bad people just, like, finally getting a time to, like, lash out. But they're saying, no, these are normal, happy, not violent people that becoming...
See someone getting, like, beat up and they're like, I'm about to join the fight.
Yeah, they said that...
With the Smash Bros. Controller in my hand. Let's do this.
Well, they said it's this concept of identity fusion. You heard this concept?
No, but I like
it. Sounds cool, right?
Yeah.
The findings reinforce research team's previous work to understand the role of identity fusion in extreme behavior. They suggest that fighting extreme behavior with extreme policing, such as the use of tear gas or military force, is likely to be counterproductive and will only trigger more violence, driving the most committed fans to step up and defend their fellow fans. As with all identity fusion-driven behaviors, the violence comes from a positive desire to protect the group, says the project director, Professor Harvey Whitehouse. Understanding this might help us tap into this social bonding and use it for good. For example, we already see groups of fans setting up food banks or crowdfunding pages for chronically ill fans they don't even know. So yeah, they're like, it's like this thing where we just like fucking, you get in a group and you just fuse with the group and you want to protect her. You just feel it's like this, that is kind of like the other side of the coin of like what it means to be a human, you know, just like super identifying with a group.
Yeah. This would also explain like why it's possible to be like radicalized on an internet forum.
You think it is?
Yeah, I mean, if the basic concept here is that, like, a group identity, even if it's, like, a weird, estranged sports group.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you see someone getting attacked, you're like, well, I need to do something about that.
Yeah, true. Like, even nonviolent groups on the internet, as soon as they become an enemy to anyone, people will step up and defend it. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember where I heard this, like, there's something about how like military experiences, like people who've like fought in the trenches together, it's not just like remembering the terror of war and like that makes it important. It's like it is like a transcendent experience. Like it's like it's like the most special moment in a lot of people's lives.
Oh, being at war.
That, that fusion during war.
Oh yeah, no, I've heard that. I don't remember where I heard it recently either, but just that, like, I don't know if this is what you were talking about, but like they talk about the bond between like two of soldiers. Like, this is such a tense environment, and you know that everybody has your back in a way that like is beyond any sort of like relationship in your life, because it's so fucking extreme. And they said that whenever they get back from war and they're in regular day, everyday life, that that sense of like brothership or whatever, brotherhood, is gone, and that you sort of get like a bit depressed from that, the lack of that.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, I did. I don't remember where I saw that recently, but I saw that. So let me see. I got a few more stories. There's this one about, I don't want that one. I guess let me actually.
I don't want to pay for the Washington Post. Can I just say that?
Yeah, no, you know, I found a way around the paywalls. It's pretty easy.
I just
copy the link and then put it in Instapaper, and somehow it doesn't recognize that.
Oh yeah, because the server's like scraping it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, I found this article in Nature, and it was also paywalled. It was like pay $40. And I was like, no.
Yeah, I know that there's like a few people like poking around Twitter being like, we need to like make all academic papers like publicly available. And it is a bummer.
That's whenever true.
I have this topic that I'm like, do you guys get that how rare it is for any human to be like interested in stuff this nerdy? Like, you should be happy I'm interested in reading your bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, already like hard enough to get people to read it at all, but then you make me pay a large amount of money to see it.
Well, you know, it's like,
it just doesn't make sense.
It's like enterprise. Basically, they can get businesses to pay for it, so why not? But I also feel like there's like got to be some way around it. Like, you know what I mean?
Sure, there is. Maybe I'm not hardcore enough.
No, I mean, obviously there's ways around it. I'm saying, like, can we get like a government grant or something to like, I don't know, give this fucking university $40,000 or something.
It's just annoying that there's like good information behind paywalls, and then the only information that isn't is lame.
And
it's not like that money is going towards research.
Right.
The money that will be going to pay for these research papers?
No, it's going to like the aggregator, like, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever those things are, like LexisNexis or whatever.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't know who owns that, but still.
I mean, not that I don't want to give them money, but I just feel like it's in science's interest to make it as easy as possible for people to read their shit, because like, seriously, some of it's dry as hell.
That's a fact. Man, I really want to find this Nature article. I just, I'll never find it.
Well, oh yeah, I'll read this article because this is cool. This is tech, animal, and robot fusion.
Whoa.
There's a good video that goes with this too. It's actually on Futurity too. Look out, Verge. Futurity's coming for you.
Whoa. Heyo.
I don't know if they're good, but anyway, this is, the title is Rescue Rover Deals with Rough Terrain Like a Beaver. We're developing a system for autonomous robots to behave similarly. The robot continuously monitors and modifies its terrain to make it more mobile. So they're saying, like, the way that beavers build dams is they just look at this water moving and they're like, I gotta make this not move. And then they just start doing the stick thing, start stacking them, and then eventually a dam is built. And it's like through these just simple reactions to the environment, these simple rules that help it manipulate its environment. You know what I mean? So anyway, there's this robot. They like had to get it from like on the ground up to this platform. And then there's a bunch of rocks all around. And so the robot looks at the environment and then just moves beanbags around to make it easier for it to climb up these rocks so they can climb up the rocks. So this is like an algorithm that they're working on so that robots can modify their environment, for instance, in like rescue scenarios, in case they need like move stuff to help them get around stuff. You know what I mean?
I love that.
Yeah, so
that's awesome. I haven't seen much. I mean, like, as far as I know, like opening doors is still like a pretty important topic of research for robotics. So like any modifying an environment dynamically, but the thing is like, man, like you guys have played video games, like video game physics are not perfect.
No.
And so like you're going to have, like, this is going to have to judge how heavy things are.
Yeah.
And then like the physics of moving stuff around. Like as soon as you think of the environment as non-static, you have to do a lot more calculations.
Yeah.
Well, also, what I will say though is that like I think the thing that we often like lose track of is the fact that like animals are sort of like, even mammals are sort of like swarm mentality on a different time frame, you know? So like it's hard for us to think, because like robots are like $1 million to make. But imagine if you just had 30,000 of them over time. You know what I mean? Like if they could just reproduce like animals do.
Oh, you mean just like through generations learning?
Yeah, just like, just, but what I really like about this article is like, I'm so about like strip mining algorithms from like animal cognition. Like that is so dope.
Yeah. Do you want to hear it? There's like a couple of sentences here that you guys would be very interested in. This is the reason why I had to read it, because there's this new word, a new vocabulary word that I think you guys would both be interested in, called stigmergy. Heard that word?
Ooh, no.
No.
Stigmergy. Okay. So to address this issue, the issue of like needing to modify your environment and then learn from it, you know, he's studying stigmergy, a biological phenomenon that has been used to explain everything from the behavior of termites and beavers to the popularity of Wikipedia. According to stigmergy, the complex nests that termites build are not the result of a well-defined plan or deep communication. Instead, it's a type of indirect coordination. Initially, a termite will deposit a pheromone-laced ball of mud in a random spot. Other termites attracted to the pheromones are more likely to drop their mud balls at the same spot, and the behavior ultimately leads to a large termite nest. Researchers have compared this behavior to Wikipedia and other online collective projects. For example, one user creates a page in the online encyclopedia, another will modify it and with additional information, and the process continues indefinitely with users building more complex pages. So, yeah.
So it's kind of like network effects.
Yeah.
Will humans be able to recreate my cognition through my garbage tweets?
Are you just talking Westworld right now?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
No, I don't think so. No, are you saying stigmergy is the way you get back to you?
I think so. I mean, yeah. So if you look at it backwards, like, you know, like, yes. Well, I mean, just like, what is the physiology that like lets this happen? You know what I mean? Like, maybe that's not important, but you know, if everybody's dropping their mud, listen, on Twitter, we are all dropping our mud balls.
Yeah, definitely.
There's no difference. There's no difference between these two things.
Yeah, and somebody drops like a really stinky mud ball, more people drop their mud balls on that mud ball. Eventually, it's a viral tweet.
but. On Twitter, yeah, people are like putting their mud balls next to other mud balls, but it's not creating an elaborate, like, structurally sound.
We don't know what the structure is. Sort of invisible. That's the weird thing. The structure that
termites and ant colonies and bees and stuff, those aren't invisible.
Yeah, I know, but that's what's
cool about digital.
Are those stigmergy? Are bees stigmergy, or do they have a different method?
No, that's it. Stigmergy is, it's the same thing. That's what they're saying. I don't think it has to be a physical structure. It's more of a compounding structure. It's like you remember we talked about Katamari last week?
Yeah.
It's kind of like Katamari. You start with the one thing, and it's just like everything is like grow. It's like a fractal, you know.
Okay, but like, so let's go back to beavers, right? If I put a stick somewhere, I'm like, oh yeah, this is a good place to put a stick.
Mm-hmm.
And then another beaver comes along, like, well, you already put a stick there, I'll put a stick next to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of important how that second beaver places its stick, whether or not it's going to build towards the dam or just be a random pile of sticks.
Well, see,
you can put a random pile of sticks in a river, and that's not a dam.
weren't they saying though that the Stigmergy in this case was the force of them running water? And so like, oh, I gotta stop this. Like, I'm
well, they were just using that as an example of like the running, stopping the running water was the goal, and then it does all this shit to get to that goal.
I mean, listen, if somebody's on the other side of my wall and they're just like tapping on my wall with a hammer, I want to go, my behavior modifies and I want to go to the other side and be like, fucking, what are you doing?
Wait, what?
But
I'm saying there's in this case, like there's a stimulus, like an initial stimulus. And then there is a natural behavioral reaction to that stimulus that like, apparently it sounds like that these scientists have like started to zero in on.
Yeah. I don't think that in this article they talked about, you know, the nitty gritty of like what is in the algorithm. They just introduced the basic concept of compounding complexity.
But it's like with Wikipedia, you're building towards an actual shared goal.
Wikipedia.
This is the method of coordination for that shared goal, which is non like hierarchical, but it still is a shared goal.
Yeah. Listen, I want to see the structure of the, what is it called? Stigma. What is it?
I mean, there's a lot of Stigmergy. I mean, look at a termite nest. That's the structure.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I just want to know what the Stigmergy of Twitter is. I want to see what our collective balls are accumulating to.
I think it's hard to see exactly what it would be. I would argue like the, you know how like every once in a while those network maps of the internet pop up of like connections. I imagine it's that. I don't know though.
But I mean, obviously I've just learned this term, so I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But what I'm conjecturing is like, if I said like, hey, let's tell a story, I'll say the first sentence, you say the second sentence, like, and then you have like the seventh person in the chain says poop, but you know, like they are contravening the purpose of the Stigmergy.
Yes.
You know, they're like breaking it. And that's why I feel like something like Twitter is all people breaking.
Combo breaking.
So maybe, combo breakers all over the place. So yeah, you can have some people Stigmergering.
Another, if you just Google the word Stigmergy, one of the most popular image searches, they show like a school of fish and like a bunch of ants, but the most popular is those when birds fly in those huge clusters, you know, that look like crazy swarms. Yeah. And that's like, yeah, they're always talking about how Stigmergy always comes down to like a couple simple rules. And I feel like Paul and I have talked about this before, where like the simple rule for birds in like those swarm clusters is just do what your neighbors are doing, just like follow their rules. And so that's how they get these like really complex swarms, and it's like sort of random. So I guess those guys that would be always throwing combos are like whenever you see those, like if you just watch those, you know, like the sudden swells, the sudden like ripples where they just change direction. I guess those are the fucking mavericks.
yeah.
shit posting or something. I don't know.
The leader of the flock of ducks is just a shit poster. And
everyone's RTing
so hard.
Or the variance happens because of like wind or environment, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe it's not a maverick. Someone just gets knocked off course.
And or a volcano.
Like, let's go with
a volcano explodes. You know, a volcano explodes. Everybody's talking about that. That's like literally. That's something.
Well, I like.
That's so true. There is a flocking behavior on Twitter as far as like what our attention is on.
I guess the thing with the beavers that I was like really interested in is like the impulse. You know what I mean? Like we've definitely talked about on past podcasts.
Just the beavers like, hate running water. It's just like something about it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like I'm serious. Like why does a dog make that little fucking nest rotation?
Yeah. There. True. Well, yeah. I mean, it's because it's like vital. It's like it's just one of those hardwired tendencies.
That's what I'm saying. It's like these beavers are like, God, I gotta fucking stop this water.
What? Okay. What if a beaver is separated from its parents at birth? it was have that have, same instinct.
I think that instinct for a beaver is so natural. I've got to imagine it doesn't like, have to literally learn to how to
literally
build a dam.
Hardwired. I mean, that's pretty bonkers.
I
mean,
I don't
if you think about
I'd
it,
have
like,
to Google it, but if, maybe not.
If I was going to try to write a computer program, right? Like we're you know, we got one beaver sperm and one beaver egg, and there's enough information somehow in there. Like, I'm not saying that there isn't. I'm just like that. This baby beaver is going to grow up to really want to stop water.
Yeah.
Like, that is a very complex, I mean, not like, obviously, you know, it's not like Declaration of Independence level of intellect, but it's right. still like, it's a real thought, you know, that leads to action. I mean, that's pretty astounding to me.
Yeah, I mean, listen, my mind is being tainted by Westworld, which is like focusing on I guess the point of this season was like, do humans really have free will?
I don't think they sort of don't.
Let's.
Man, I heard a really good proof for why they do the other day, but I forgot what it was.
Oh, shit, I would, oh, damn it.
It was a slam dunk.
Oh man, you know what's podcast we should do? We should do a podcast that's just like really good GitHubs that we found this week.
Ooh.
Do you really have that many?
For sure.
I mean, I'd love to, you know what I'd like that podcast if it started off with like, how do I even use that information from GitHub?
Totally.
So
have you heard of Docker?
No.
Yeah.
Paul, maybe someday you can explain Docker to me, because I feel like I'm on tier two and you might be on like tier seven.
I wrote a like a tier one explain Docker post for The Verge.
I read it. It
good. Oh.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I read that and now I'm a tier two.
Okay. I gotcha. Yeah, I could probably explain it a bit more. But yeah, we'll save it for the GitHub. What's a good name for the GitHub podcast?
Oh, man. I don't know. Ooh, there's so many like little programmer names you could have it.
My first instinct is just the GitCast. I don't know.
The repo man?
Taken.
The repo man?
The GitCast?
That's probably already taken by GitHub. Probably. If it's not, then that's dumb.
Do you think we should end this show, or do you want to hear that thing about surveillance cameras?
Paul, what do you got?
What?
Get, G-E-T, get.
Get. Pretty good. I like it.
Maybe, you know that gamer phrase, get good? Maybe it could be get good.
Get.
Oh, sorry. Sorry for completely derailing your podcast. Run
down.
Yeah, just apologize to the fans. They're the ones who are just waiting for science.
Sorry, audience. Sorry for live here. I know you got the science Jones. So all right.
We're gonna close up the cast. I'm gonna skip the thing about the surveillance camera thing. Whatever. It's a pretty cool idea. I'll send you the message, but like it's kind of hard to explain, so I just abandoned it.
Yeah, let's follow up on it.
Okay, so that's the cast. What was your guys' favorite story, looking back on it?
The volcano story where no one died.
Yeah, it's on the Galapagos, so it'll fuck up the environment. But it's
probably beautiful.
This one's doing it all the time, so it's not a huge deal.
Yeah.
I seriously can't remember what the topics
were. Well, we talked about dirty space, the
dirty space is pretty good.
The loose flamingo.
Ooh, those
organic molecules. Getting fish from the deep ocean.
Yeah, the moon one was good.
Social bonding, key cause of football violence. What time feels like when you're improvising. I guess the fugitive flamingo is my fave. After all.
So strong.
Okay, thanks for listening. Thanks for being on the show. Are we going in Stitchcast?
Nothing sewing related this week.
Well, I'm saying, like, are we going to do it, like, I don't know, sometime soon, Stitchcast?
I'm probably going to order my sewing machine, like, probably in the next few days. I just, there's so many different kinds. There's a few different kinds, and it's just hard to know which ones are the one you want, you know?
Yeah.
Well, maybe once you feel confident on what you're going to buy, maybe that's a good opening episode.
Good point.
That's a good call.
If you guys didn't know, we did a podcast last week, and at the end we decided we were going to do a Stitch Cast where we talk about sewing and other stuff.
And embroidery.
Yeah. I want to offer a correction to anybody who listened to that. I said that the sewing machine was like sort of like the birth of the computer, but it was the loom, which is like, you know, kind of a like sidestep from the sewing machine, but still the Jacquard loom is the specific one. It's like, it's the one with like the punch cards that's made like lots of different patterns. Yeah. Ooh. I don't know what Sufjan was singing about. Not sure. okay. Thanks for listening. Write us in at the show if you want us to talk about certain topics or if you have a story you want to hear about.
Nice.
Should I put on the theme song again?
Yes.
I lost it. Hold on.
Science, 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 science.
I mean, I don't have my own yet. I'll work on getting my own.
It's Science Thursday. Science, science,
science. Science,
science, science,
science. Science
Thursday.
Nailed it. It's a Science Thursday. Okay. Thanks for listening. Bye, guys.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.